Chapter 16. After Friedlander presented his concept to his own management team, and then they kicked it upstairs to eventually get briefed to senior staff at UNEF Command, we settled down for my favorite part of being in the military. Waiting. The member governments of UNEF understandably had a lot of questions, mostly for Skippy. They wanted technical details, for him to model different scenarios, basically for him to convince them he could get rid of the worst effects of the cloud without cooking Earth with a solar blowtorch. That was fine with me, and Skippy did what they wanted. Though he complained to me about what a waste of time it was to explain anything math-related to a bunch of filthy monkeys. What was not fine with me were the hints in the media, both subtle and less polite, that the whole plan to use a series of minor solar flares was impractical bullshit and that I cooked up the whole scheme to give false hope to billions of people. And to deflect from my reckless, unauthorized, illegal, and possibly mutinous action above the Philippine Sea. Damn, that pissed me off. In a role reversal, Skippy had to talk me off the ledge before I said or did something I would regret, while Sims counseled that maybe some asshole's dirt side needed a wake-up slap. That might have been partially due to speculation on social media that Sims and I were acting on behalf of the U.S. government to give our native country an advantage. While other nations put on hold their efforts to secure land and resources in the tropics due to our false promise to deal with the cloud, the USA was moving full speed ahead to prepare for a frozen future. Those were the rumors, anyway, and the more we denied those lies, the more convinced people were that we were concealing the truth. Skippy is smart. He knows a lot. About just about everything. But he rarely says anything wise because he is so freaking clueless most of the time. That time was different. He told me and Sims that the only way to squelch the rumors was to prove them wrong by getting rid of the cloud, or at least beginning that process. Which we couldn't do without official approval from a bunch of bureaucrats from nations who absolutely did not trust each other one bit, and who pretty much did not trust me at all, even though I warned them the mutual assured destruction policy would not protect Earth from every possible danger. So, I was in a foul mood when I walked into the galley for lunch. Valkyrie was running low on fresh food. We were eating a lot of stuff like pasta. That day, the crew was preparing nachos, even though the previous day was Taco Tuesday. Apparently, one thing we had a lot of was salsa. Grudzian was setting bowls of tortilla chips and salsa on tables, making me realize I was kind of early for lunch. Instead of walking out and coming back later, I volunteered to set up for the meal. Picking up a bowl of chips from a side table, I couldn't help popping one into my mouth before Grudzian could protest. I said awkwardly, my mouth full of chip that my tongue was trying to reject.
What is this?
Colonel Sims says you should be watching your sodium level.
Forcing myself to swallow the tasteless chip, I smacked my lips with disgust. So she stocked the galley with low sodium chips?
No, sir.
He shook his head. Then how?
They're regular chips.
He shrugged.
I just licked off all the salt.
Clutching a hand to my mouth, I tried to stumble over to the nearest trash can, which was too far away. Behind me, I heard laughter. The entire galley crew was laughing. At me. Turning around and breathing deep to quell my rebellious stomach, I saw Grudzian holding up his hands, and he winked at me.
Sorry, sir. I couldn't resist.
Maybe I should have been pissed off. A moment before, I certainly was in a very bad mood. Seeing the crew chuckling together, I realized that although I wear the star of a brigadier general, to the crew, to my people, I can still be one of the guys.
Okay.
Good one. I did a finger gunpoint at Grudzian, who had an ear-to-ear grin. Seriously. I looked at the bowl of taste-free chips in the bowl. Does anyone eat this stuff?
Not that I know of, Grudzian said with a shudder.
Okay then, the low-sodium chips were a different color from the actual chips that humans ate. We are going to, I dumped half of the cardboard chips in a trash can, pretend that someone ate these things, if Sims asks. I want OPSEC on this lockdown, I warned the galley crew. Grudzian had a question.
What if the XO asks who ate them?
then you put a pile of them on your plate and you enjoy them. That's an order. He was no longer grinning.
I'm pretty sure the Geneva Convention has something against this, sir.
I cocked my head at him. Didn't you drink banana-flavored sludges every morning for a month?
That was to win a bet, he said, like that explained everything.
Consider this a challenge, then. Command approved a solar flare test. That is not exactly true. They did eventually approve a test, but they didn't make the decision on their own. The member governments of UNEF and the UN overall argued about the best course of action and accomplished nothing for too long. Really, each country was hedging their bets. Those nations that could potentially freeze used negotiations, threats both subtle and blatant, financial incentives, and clandestine means to secure rights to move their populations. Following the Philippine Sea incident, the president of Bolivia was assassinated after proclaiming loudly that he would not sell out his country to Yankee imperialists, or something like that. I'm not saying the CIA was involved in dirty tricks here, but the new El Presidente was very happy to sign a development deal with a combined American-Canadian syndicate. Hey, I am not Earth's chief of police. It's not my job to interfere in domestic stuff dirtside, and I would probably only make things worse if I did. When I do feel the need to interfere, I get Skippy to do it for me. Like when after 3 days of secret backroom deliberations, UNEF was making zero progress on giving me a decision about a solar flare test. I called Skippy while I was doing nothing more useful than drinking coffee in my office, feet up on my desk. Hey, Skippy.
Hey, Joe, he answered warily.
If you are going to ask again whether UNEF command is any closer to a decision, the answer is no, just like it was when you asked the same freaking question half an hour.
That's not why I called you.
It's not?
No, I don't even have a question.
Okay. Then why are you wasting my time with, I have an observation, a concern, you might say, about ComSec?
Communications, security, police, he sniffed.
I control all message traffic to and from Valkyrie. Sure, maybe Bilby thinks he can sneak around my...
Not about communication security here. I mean on Earth.
Skippy, the UN classified our proposal to use a series of minor solar flares to disperse the Jupiter cloud as top secret. Same with our request to perform a proof-of-concept test in another solar system.
True, it is tagged as top secret.
Why do you... If the world's public learned that UNEF has a possible solution to the cloud and has done abso-freaking-lutely nothing with the information, that could put enormous pressure on the UNEF member governments. It would be just terrible if that information leaked out. I paused. If you know what I mean.
Oh. Geez. Darn it, Joe. Why didn't you tell me to monitor ComSec on Earth?
My bad. I am very, very sorry about that.
Well, it's too late now. Multiple top-secret files about the solar flare proposal have just been posted to the Internet by an anonymous source codenamed Deep Sinus, and...
Deep Sinus? I choked on the word.
Come on, knucklehead. Deep Throat is already taken.
Do you want me to do this or not?
I have no knowledge of anything you may or may not be doing.
Oh, right. Thanks. Hey, I'm glad we never had this talk, if you know what I mean.
Gotcha.
It's my own damned fault. Because I was slowly trying to adjust shipboard time to the time at UNEF Command Headquarters in Paris, I was asleep at what a few days ago would have been 2100 hours. You civilians would call that 9 p.m. To help me fall asleep faster, I had taken a small sleeping pill, and a large beer, if you want the truth, plus a glass of warm milk. All that did was ensure I got up to groggily stumble to the bathroom an hour after my head hit the pillow.
Joe!
Skippy's avatar lit up the darkened room, hovering over the foot of my bed.
Ah!
Shielding my eyes with a hand, I squinted at him.
Tone it down, will ya?
Sorry. Is this important? I asked, hopeful that UNEF had issued orders to complete a solar flare test.
Of course it is. You think I would wake you up for something that was not important?
Smacking my forehead, I asked, is this about Sesame Street again?
No. Although I am not debating again about how Cookie Monster never eats cookies, he just crushes them in his mouth and they fall to the floor.
It's a travesty, Joe.
What are they teaching children when—
I said I was not talking about that.
Well, that isn't why I called you anyway.
Great. Can I go back to sleep now?
Sure, if you want to miss the major breaking news story I have.
Crap.
I sat on the edge of the bed.
Because of the enforced time change, I had been taking too long to fall asleep for a couple nights, leaving me with a sleep deficit. My only chance to get a solid night of shut-eye was to make him go away as soon as possible.
Go ahead. Hit me with it.
You were wrong. Totally wrong.
I'm probably going to regret this, but what was I wrong about this time?
Are you telling me that releasing secret documents about the solar flare project did not pressure UNEF into approving?
If you will shut up, I can tell you what this is about.
Please do, I mumbled through my hands.
Hey, if you would like to play 20 questions, I can—
I would not like, please just tell me.
You were wrong, that I can't write hip-hop tunes.
What?
Don't you remember? You challenged me to write music the crew would like.
Yeah, but you never did anything about it. I thought you forgot.
Oh, crap, do I have to listen to a bunch of your—
You do not have to listen to anything, because I dropped my freshest tune a few days ago, and it is a smash international hit.
Uh-oh. I had a bad feeling about what he said.
This is your rap persona as a rap master, Skippy Skip?
No. Actually, I took your idea, and I am known as Lil Shithead. People love the name because it shows I am humble, and I'm keeping it real.
Yeah, that's— humble is how I would describe you for sure.
Oh, shut up.
He started beatboxing, which made me think he was getting all of his hip-hop info from the OG days.
My name is Skippy. My rhymes are zippy.
That is your smash hit?
No, dum-dum, that's just my intro.
Let me understand this. You, a completely unknown artist, dropped a single onto streaming platforms, and it became an instant smash hit?
Worldwide? Of course it's worldwide. I released versions in 160 languages. Just because you barely speak one language doesn't—
Uh-huh. Tell me, what was your marketing campaign?
Well... That's not important, Joe. True artists like me want to focus only on the music. So what did you do?
Okay, so shmaybe, by pure coincidence, music streaming platforms all over the world suffered a weird glitch that even I can't explain, and every request for a song popped up my fresh tune instead.
A weird glitch, huh?
Anything else?
Well, just some silly rumors, he said in a barely audible mumble.
Rumors, huh?
Like what?
Nothing. Hey, sorry to be keeping you up. You should—
what?
Rumors.
Ugh. You started this, little shithead.
Okay, but this is totally not my fault. Someone in my fan club started a rumor that little shithead is really His Holiness Skippy Azurmoney, and hold on.
This is about your fan club?
Of course.
He didn't even need to imply the duh.
Uh-huh. So whoever runs your fan club is responsible for the rumor?
That can't be, Joe.
Why not?
Because I am the president of my fan club.
Sorry, my brain just blew a circuit. You are the president of your own fan club?
Yes.
Come on, I couldn't trust something important like that to a bunch of filthy monkeys.
Oh my, the whole point of a fan club is to celebrate the awesomeness of whoever people are a fan of, right? Do you think any monkeys on your miserable home planet can truly appreciate the full scope of my awesomeness?
I actually can't argue with that logic, I admitted. Let's go back to the rumor you started.
It's not important, Joe.
Aha!
So you did start the rumor.
Crap.
Hey, that's entrapment.
Tell me about this rumor now.
All I did was hint that Lil Shithead might be a manifestation of His Holiness. Then my worshipful followers took my words totally out of context with wild speculation that my lyrics contain a hidden meaning that could unlock the secrets of eternal life or something like that. That is not my fault. While tapping on my Z-phone, I asked, You had nothing to do with the rumor about hidden code words?
Certainly not.
Interesting. So, this book I see for sale online here. I held up my phone to his avatar. With the catchy title of How the Lyrics of Lil Shithead Can Unlock the Secrets of Unlimited Wealth and Eternal Life. That wasn't you who wrote it? It is published by the followers of His Holiness the Guru Skippy Asyamuni. See? Clearly that wasn't me. I see the acknowledgments page says inspired by an audience with His Holiness himself and published with his blessings. 1795 is a lot to pay for a 40-page pamphlet, Skippy. Hey, that price includes a free poster designed by... Crap, this is entrapment! Why are you doing this? I thought all your followers bailed after the UN revealed that Skippy is an alien artificial intelligence. He laughed. As if. Joe, you forgot one thing about my followers. What's that? Think about it. They are stupid and gullible, Joe. Who else joins a cult? I thought you kept insisting it is a club.
I think that ship has sailed, he sighed.
Anyway, when the truth about me was exposed, my most dedicated followers immediately decided the UN's announcement of me being an AI was a conspiracy. Cultists love conspiracies, Joe.
I'm sure you did the responsible thing, I rolled my eyes, by informing your followers that you are an alien AI and not a mystical guru.
Ha! Sure, like that was ever going to work. Listen, numbskull, I actually did try that, and my followers decided my denial itself was part of the conspiracy and proof that the UN is desperate to cover up the real story. They became more convinced that only they knew the actual truth.
Shit.
You can't fight a conspiracy theory with facts, Joe. Please just don't let this be another thing UNEF Command busts my balls about, okay? How can I control what someone else does? With Skippy, you have to choose which battles to fight, and it was clear I wasn't going to win that one. Oh, boy. Okay, can you at least stop hacking into streaming platforms?
Already done, Joe. My followers spread the word about Lil Shithead, then a bunch of elitist jerks on social media slammed my music, which actually only boosted my profile. Now, apparently the public has decided my tunes are so bad they're great, if you can believe that.
Like, Lil Shithead's music is a profound statement on the current state of popular culture, or some bullshit like that.
You're not insulted that people think your music is bad?
Please, he scoffed. I'm a hit, baby. Hey, I've got country music stars in Nashville wanting to record a crossover duet with me. You can't get more successful than that.
I am super happy, I yawned, that you are happy about it.
This is why you woke me up in the middle of the freaking night?
No, of course not. UNEF Command just approved a solar flare test. They will issue orders to you shortly.
Oh, shit. I stumbled off the bed and reached for my pants. Why the hell didn't you tell me that first?
Because that isn't the lead story, dum-dum. What's important is that I was right, and you were wrong. He used a thumb and forefinger to make an L on his forehead.
Yeah, let's focus on that. I gave him a single finger gesture, and I was not indicating that he is number one.
Oh, shut up.
UNEF Command loved some of the news we brought, especially the part about acquiring 18 battle cruisers of the same class as Valkyrie. They were more than a bit disappointed to hear that our new battle cruisers would never be quite as capable as Valkyrie, and that unless we found or stole a large supply of exotic materials to feed the Ragnar Station fabricators, our new ships would run out of replacement parts for equipment that wore out. The alternative was to cut some of the ships apart to keep others running, and UNEF quickly let me know that was not an option.
Why? Because politics, that's why.
There was always going to be politics involved when our species suddenly acquired a batch of advanced technology warships, but it pissed me off that the governments of Earth got greedy and stupid and squandered an opportunity to create a powerful, truly unified navy. Instead, they let nationalistic pride get in the way of combat effectiveness.
the five permanent members of UNEF decided they should each get three of the new battlecruisers, with the remaining three ships being designated as a squadron that would rotate between operators. Listen, as an American, I am proud to know that we control three new powerful warships to be named Freedom, Independence, and Constellation. They would have all American crews and operate as a squadron. Yes, they would be under the overall command of a UN admiral, and there was an argument to be made that having crews of a squadron all share the same language and cultural background made communication easier, and each nation would be responsible for providing crews, training, and all the logistical support their ships needed, so no nation got a free ride. But instead of having a truly United Nations Navy, we would have five or more national forces that might or might not coordinate their efforts. There would be rivalries, jealousies, and a whole extra layer of bureaucratic bullshit to deal with whenever the Navy deployed. The lack of a unified command structure top to bottom was a weakness, and for sure our enemies would identify and exploit any weakness. You think I am exaggerating? Let me give you an example. To avoid insults that were intentional and not, UNEF decided that names for our new battlecruisers had to be inoffensive to anyone. So, the USA could not name a ship after battles because Midway would insult the Japanese and Yorktown would insult the British and Normandy would insult the Germans. Every battle had a loser, and they don't want to be reminded of their defeat. I think the USA made good choices for names, but not all the names were without controversy. The British and French got into a minor diplomatic dust-up when it was discovered both nations were considering the same name for a ship. The Brits wanted to call a ship Formidable, and the Frenchies would say Formidable, but it was spelled Formidable no matter how you pronounced it. Naturally, the news media on both sides approached the subject in a calm, rational manner. Not. The news media stirred up as much anger as they could, because that gets people to pay attention and click on ads for soap or whatever, and advertising is how the media makes money. Anyway, both governments both decided there are plenty of other words available, and so the Brits chose to name their new starships Vanguard, Glorious, and Furious. The French chose Liberté, République, and Vérité. Remember, no one on Earth had even seen these ships yet. They were still undergoing refit and upgrades at Ragnar Shipyard. Oh, and as a bonus, I caught hell from UNEF public relations people for naming Ragnar Station based on a science fiction TV show. I wasn't worried. The UN was considering a list of names they deemed appropriate for that shipyard, which was being disassembled anyway. I'm sure I will be long retired before they decide on a new name. Approval for a solar flare test arrived just as Skippy expected. My orders also came with complications, because of course they did. To ensure the test results were reported accurately, we had to take aboard around 24 scientists and UN officials. When I pointed out that our food supplies were already stretched, command told me the dropship would be carrying plenty of fresh food for everyone. The process of taking aboard a dropship was not simple, because we had to be concerned that enemy ships could be in the area, hoping to ambush Valkyrie. We launched one of our high-tech Maxulk's Panther dropships that flew to Earth in stealth, only becoming visible when it hit the atmosphere over the Atlantic. After a few days, during which time Valkyrie maneuvered in stealth closer to our homeworld, the Panther lifted off, escorted by three Kristang Dragons from Earth's small fleet of those comparatively primitive spacecraft. The four ships flew up, reached escape velocity, and continued accelerating away from the planet until they were traveling at the speed required for the rendezvous. At that point, they cut their engines and coasted away, slowly losing speed at a predictable rate as Earth's gravity well acted to slow them down. If you think the Dragons were there to protect the Panther with their guns, you're wrong. We needed them to saturate the area with their sensor fields, searching for stealth enemy ships. All we needed the Panther pilots to do was keep a steady course until Valkyrie jumped in with such precision, only a couple puffs of thrusters got everything lined up exactly. A docking bay door was open, and our battlecruiser was flying parallel to the Panther, moving sideways fast enough to quickly close the gap so we weren't exposed for too long, and just slowly enough so the suspensor field in the docking bay could prevent the Panther from splattering on the inner bulkhead. The moment we got a green light from the docking bay, Shepard jabbed a button and we jumped away. Step one complete.
Step two was to jump out to the backstop wormhole, go through, and begin jumping toward the next wormhole that led in the direction of the star system where we needed to conduct the test. Unfortunately, we were on the other side of backstop, and the nerd squad from the UN was still arguing about where to go. Skippy, I called while leaning way back in my office chair. What is the freaking problem? There are many issues to consider, Joe. Even his avatar looked exasperated. No, there is not. I'll make this simple. The job is to conduct a test on a star similar to the Sun, a G-type main sequence star that is roughly 4 to 5 billion years old, right? There is also, yes, I know you need to identify a star that has a similar chemical makeup and a similar magnetic field. I flopped my chair forward to look at his avatar. And it has to be in a star system without a lot of bad guys to interfere. Hopefully, without a heavily populated planet either. If we couldn't find a candidate star without an inhabited world, we would conduct the test on the side of the star that faced away from a populated planet. Come on, it's a big galaxy. There must— Joe! He shouted. If you will shut your crumb catcher for a minute, I will explain. The problem is we need to identify a star system that replicates conditions within the local bubble. The what? Did you not read the test proposal at all? I read the section that had pictures. The nerdy text went over my head, so Earth's star system is in what monkey astronomers call the local bubble. That is an area of extra empty space about space is empty, I protested. All of space, even between galaxies, contains something, numbskull. Dust, individual hydrogen atoms, that sort of thing. No, yeah. I struggled to recall. The interstellar medium. Very good, get yourself a juice box. This local bubble around Earth is roughly 300 light years across, and the ISM there is super thin compared to most of the Milky Way galaxy. The bubble was created a very long time ago, when supernovas exploded and the resulting shockwave pushed material out of the way. That means there is significantly less inward pressure on the solar wind in your home star system, and that changes the conditions of the test. You are kidding me. I am not. The science team is debating how much of an effect the— Forget the monkeys, what do you think? Well, technically they are correct that the purpose of this test is only to prove the concept. Like, can you safely and effectively warp a star to create a small solar flare? If the answer is yes, we will replicate the test in our home star system where the freaking local solar wind can do anything it wants. Damn it! This is what the nerds have been arguing about? You say nerds like that's a bad thing. They're smarter than you. You're jealous of having a big brain doesn't automatically mean someone has good judgment, Skippy. Listen, one thing I've learned in the military is that the perfect too often gets in the way of the good. Like, people waste so much time trying to make things perfect, they don't get the good enough accomplished. Screw this. I am making a command decision right now. I thumped a fist on the desk. With Valkyrie on the far side of the backstop wormhole, I could make unilateral decisions. The UN commissioners and the science team would argue that I only had authority to make decisions related to security, and I had that covered. A delay in making a decision put Earth in unnecessary danger. Plus, a delay exposed Valkyrie to enemy action. While that second one was kind of bullshit, it was close enough to the truth that I could rely on it. Are you sure about this, Joe? Abso-freaking-lutely I am. Show me a list or a chart or whatever of candidate star systems. Sort the list first by security parameters. I want star systems that have multiple wormholes to provide access. None that have a presence by senior species or top-tier clients. Secondary parameter is the similarity of the star to our sun.
I thought the secondary parameter was supposed to be the lack of a world with a substantial population.
No, make that third on the list. We can deal with it by conducting the test on the other side of the star. Okie dokie. Anything else? Fine. Fourth, star systems where the ISM is thin like this bubble around Earth. The list is complete, he announced as my laptop made a musical ding sound. I blinked and looked up at him. That's a big list. It's a big galaxy. Then add another parameter. Flight time to the test site. Wait. The flight path has to conform to parameter one. No taking us through wormholes that are heavily used by either of the senior species.
Ding!
Crap, the list was still way too long. Let's make this easy. What do you suggest? This place, he answered immediately, and a chart appeared on my laptop. It's near the Lagoon Nebula in the Sagittarius Arm. About an 8-day flight from here. We pass through only 2 wormholes, both of them in lower-tier client territory. The star system is uninhabited, and hold on. I thought all G-type stars have a Goldilocks zone where planets are habitable by our standard. What I meant was a zone near the star where water on the surface could be in liquid form.
That is mostly true, he sighed in his weary, do I really have to explain this to a monkey tone? However, a rogue star passed near that system about 1 billion years ago and pulled the one habitable planet into an extremely elliptical orbit.
Oh, like Newark. Worse than Newark. This world comes close enough to the star that the surface water has boiled away over the years. It's a rock, Joe. A big, empty rock. Okay, score one for us then. Why didn't the science nerds like this place?
Because it is close to the Lagoon Nebula. The interstellar medium there is significantly more dense than the galactic average. Around Earth, the ISM is much, much less dense than average.
Will that affect the results of the test? Not as far as I am concerned, but done. I slapped the desk. Plot a course to this, what's this star called?
It doesn't have a name. The numerical designation is, yeah. We're calling it Goldilocks because it's good enough, you know?
Plot a course. I'll tell the duty officer about the change of plan.